The views and discussion expressed on this program do not necessarily represent those of the hosts of the program, WMKV, Maple Knoll Communities, WLHS, the Lakota Local School District, or staff and management. The information and advice presented are educational in nature and not intended to be taken as specific legal, accounting, or other professional advice. Always consult with your own legal, accounting, or other professional before making any investment. Welcome to Real Life Real Estate Investing, a show to help you gain financial freedom by investing in real estate. Brought to you by the Real Estate Investors Association of Cincinnati and the Ohio Real Estate Investors Association. You're listening to Real Life Real Estate Investing on WMKV, WLHS, and the Maple Knoll Radio Network.
Welcome to Real Life Real Estate. I'm Scott Ellsworth. I'll be your host for this evening. Tonight, we have a great guest, Steve Smullen. He's a commercial real estate investor, equity marketer, trader, exchanger, broker, counselor, and educator, a distressed asset specialist. That's one of his big skills he has. He's focused on commercial real estate properties. He has over 35 years of experience finding the hidden benefits in real estate deals, and he helps his clients build their wealth. Steve, welcome.
Thank you, Scott. Good to see you.
All right. So let's start out. Tell us a little bit about your background and how you got started in commercial real estate investing.
Well, I think you just did a fair job of covering my background. So I'll skip right to the second part of that question there. How did I get started in commercial real estate? I got a real estate license back in 1986 and went to work at a residential real estate office because I thought that's what you needed to do, was start at the bottom and work your way up. And I really made the leap when the top salesman in my residential real estate office came into the office one day. He had listed a medical office building in one of the desirable suburbs of Chicago. And I looked at this building and I looked at the fee that he was going to get on the building, and I said, wow, I need to get me a piece of that. And so I just started digging into everything I could find to learn about commercial real estate. We used to, in the Chicago marketplace, have a group called the O'Hare Group, and they were commercial brokers that would get together every now and then. I don't know if it was once a month or every couple of weeks. And they would talk about the properties that they had available and what their clients were looking for. And for a long time, I sat in the back of that room and I just listened. And I didn't know what they were talking about half the time, but I listened. And on the way out the door, I'd ask somebody that looked friendly, what does this word mean? What does that word mean? And to surprise to me, some of the guys that had some pretty big properties listed didn't understand a lot of the language either.
Okay.
So I started just speaking up in the room and saying, hey, what does that mean? What is a cap rate? What do you mean when you say net, net, net? And I started asking questions, and over time, and it still happens to me today, someone will stop me outside the meeting and say, hey, I'm glad you asked that question. I was wondering that myself. I didn't understand either.
Yeah, there's a lot of folks who, doesn't matter what kind of investing you are in, that they, some people call it a jargon flag. Like, what does that mean? And people just don't know, and they don't want to speak up.
Yes, and I just absolutely encourage everybody, if you don't know, ask. The dumbest question is the one that you didn't ask. That's the only dumb question, the one that you didn't ask. Most good people are going to take a few moments and help you to understand. Most good people want to help you.
Good, I agree. So for our listeners who may not know, how would you define commercial real estate?
So I teach a class on this, and the definition that I use is not really a definition specifically. It's the opposite. Anything that is not residential real estate is commercial real estate. And the example that I use is I have a what do I call it? Parking spaces to rock concerts or something like that. You know, when you pull into a building and you pay $10, or you pull that little tag and you pay $20, $30 as you're leaving, you're paying to use commercial real estate. And that little ticket that you get is a license to use a little piece of that real estate for a designated period of time. When you go to a rock concert or the opera or something like that, you're getting a license to use a seat in a property that's operated as an income-producing asset. Yes, it has a greater purpose than just producing income, but at the end of the day, if it stops supporting itself, it stops existing.
Okay, what about residential, that like be apartment complexes? Would that be commercial?
So I use the FHA in it, and it applies to a bunch of other lender criteria. 1 to 4 units is residential, above 4 units is commercial.
Okay.
Now I should take just a moment here and qualify myself. My background, my history, my almost 40 years has not been real estate at the institutional level. I've always operated at the people level, on the human scale, on the you and I. You own a property, or we get together and we acquire a property, or maybe we gather a few more folks. But I'm not into the Wall Street investor type stuff. I've done a lot of work on stuff like that, but that's not really my background.
So tends to be a little bit smaller commercial, not massive. Property.
Well, when we say smaller, I have a tendency to say, you know, my sweet spot is probably under $6 million.
Okay.
And there's no magic formula that got me there. It's just been my experience, what I've focused on. It starts to get to $20, $30 million, and it gets a lot more complicated figuring out how you're going to come to the equity portion that you need to acquire a property like that.
Right. Another commercial property we bought was $1 million, got a good deal on it, 27,000 square feet. And, but it's a smaller, I mean, it's not a huge footprint. The equity part was easy to find the equity partners for it. It wasn't a burdensome to get that. I mean, you've got, 20, 30 million. You've got some serious equity to raise at that point.
Yes, indeed. And 27,000 square foot's not small. You share that, you lease part of that out, I assume. You don't occupy all that space yourself?
Nope. We rent some of it out, and then we rent it out to others. So it's nice because we're in control of our space, we're in control of the building, and we keep it very, very nice. So it's nice having other people in here helping to pay that, and it's profitable venture, which brings me to a thing is, why has commercial real estate become an attractive investment class for investors today? Why is it attractive?
So, well, let's go back to your building, and I don't know how you operate your business personally, but in that environment, a lot of office owners and certainly shopping center owners and larger office tenants, they don't lease the space on a year-to-year basis. So leases will typically run 3 years, 5 years, 10 years, maybe 20 years. You know, your average Walgreens lease, as an example, I haven't looked at one for a long, long, long time, but a Walgreens lease would be a 20-year lease. So one of the things that's attractive is it's a very predictable income stream for a defined period of time. And you don't have to go through that renewing or replacing process every year. You do it on an as-needed basis. In your office building, you're cleaning hallways just the exact same way you would in an apartment building. A little six flat building is probably going to have a hallway, and somebody's got to clean that clean that hallway. You've got the exact same thing in your office building, very likely.
So here's what we're going to do. We are going to take a break, but I wanted to emphasize some of the we have a Thursday meeting coming up. That's tomorrow. We've got a online meeting. It's a panel. That panel, Steve's going to be on that panel. I'm going to be moderating. It's at 6:30 p.m. on May 21st. So a lot of time to ask those questions. If you've got them, you go to CincinnatiRIA.com, and that will be a panel that will, it's about, I think, four or five people on there, and you will learn a lot and you can ask questions. So we do encourage you to do that. Go to CincinnatiRIA.com, and we'll be back in just a minute after a break. All right, and we are back. I'm here with Steve Smullen, a commercial real estate investor, lots of experience. And we are talking about commercial real estate and how investors get into that, the benefits. In fact, what is probably the biggest advantage of commercial real estate investing? What do you think that is?
Well, there's a couple of different things. We were just talking about the as needed renewal of leases. It can be 2, 3, 5, even 10 years down the road, as opposed to having to do it every 12 months, which is common in residential real estate. But I spent a period of time back in the 1990s fixing and flipping houses. I was buying out. Well, we know the story. We don't have to go into it. Our listeners, the folks listening to us, are probably there right now, fixing and flipping houses. And one day I sat down and I started thinking about the time that I spend working on a commercial deal and the time that I spent working on a residential deal. And at the time I was working with an investor client that was buying shopping centers and office buildings in distress. So that was the brokerage side of my business. And I was fixing and flipping houses on my own. And I thought about the time I was spending, and I kind of plucked these numbers from air, but it occurred to me that in the time that it took me to do fix and flip three houses, I could do a big commercial deal, and the rewards could be as much as 10 times greater than one house instead of just three times. The multiple of the return on time alone was huge. And so it was kind of a no-brainer. I should be working on the bigger stuff, not on the smaller stuff.
So that's probably one of the biggest things. The other thing I thought about was, it is a different, a lot of times a different level of individual class, because it's typically our businesses, although you may have apartments in here that are commercial, right? We have some commercial stuff that would be apartment buildings, but particularly the more commercial tend to be businesses that are going to be, you know, hopefully around for a long time, and they're a lot less, is it a lot less, The tenant being a commercial business, is that a lot less intensive as far as management goes than it is with residential, do you think?
Well, of course, there's personalities involved on both sides. If you screen your tenants well in the commercial environment, just as if you screen your tenants well in the residential environment, you're going to recognize the high maintenance people and decide you don't want to do business with them. I guess that brings us to one of the other advantages of commercial real estate is you have far less, I won't say none, but you have far less of this government interference in your day-to-day operations and how you treat your tenants and so forth. The government is not telling you what tenants you have to allow into your shopping center. The government isn't putting rent restrictions on your commercial tenants the way they are in a lot of markets across the country. Right here in my backyard, there's a lot of areas that they're working on rent restrictions. And so those things don't exist. if you have a good on-site, if you have a large enough property to support on-site maintenance people, then a tenant can pick up the phone and call directly and say, hey, the toilet over here is not working. The garbage is overflowing. Somebody spilled something out in the parking lot or whatever the case may be. You have issues in a single family home or a small apartment building. It's a lot tougher to get a contractor out to deal on a small property with a small problem. I was at a homeowners association meeting the other night, and a woman said that she had been cited because her garage light was burned out. There's garage lights, all the garage lights, continuity. It's an upscale community, continuity and so forth. And so they said, they send out a notice and say, your garage light is out. If you don't fix it, you get a fine. If you still don't fix it, you get a bigger fine. She said, I'm too old to get up there on a ladder. I called an electrician to change a light bulb. He charged me $162. $162 to change a light bulb.
Yeah, that's crazy, isn't it?
But she called an electrician, silly, foolish, as far as I'm concerned. She called an electrician. She probably called one of these big advertised company that has a truck charge just to drive out there. If they ring the doorbell and you happen to not answer it because you're in the bathroom, they leave. They're still sending you a bill for coming to show up there.
Exactly.
That's an extremely ugly example. The manager of the association said, well, I'll fix it for 160. And I piped up and said, well, I'll do it for $100.
I got it. So tell me, how do many experienced investors? So I'm an experienced investor. I invest in single families. How do I transition from that purely residential? Because it could be apartments, could be commercial, strip centers, office buildings, parking lots like you talked about. How do I transition from residential into commercial properties? How do I do that?
So Scott, you have decades of experience, and you define specifically somebody that's got experience in residential real estate, so they're transitioning. So I'm going to skip over the part about understanding income and expense analysis. You're already deeply entrenched in understanding all of the expenses from operating your multiple properties. You've got a grasp on that. And if you don't, you need to do that first. That's the foundational thing. Without that, that's where your biggest mistakes are going to make. But the next step I would say is when you're out driving around, just look at different, make yourself a list of the different kinds of real estate that you see just as you're driving to the grocery store, to the health club, to the restaurant, wherever you're going. Write down, make a list of all the different kinds of real estate that you see, and then start creating the T-bar on each one and think of the pros and cons in your mind of this kind of real estate. And what your goal is here is to focus on to the kind of real estate that you think you might like to be involved in. Because one of the other great mistakes that I see people make is they chase the flavor of the month. And the flavor of the month sometimes only lasts a few months. And if you're all in on the flavor of the month and the tides change, now you're stuck with something. That's a heck of a time to discover that you didn't even like this asset class to begin with.
All right.
So figure out what kind of real estate that you see yourself enjoying owning, being involved with, working with if you have to. And you do have to at the acquisition point. I view it as acquire, stabilize, get the systems in place, get it as close to autopilot as possible, go on vacation.
I like that. So let's talk about scalability of commercial. You know, in residential, people are single family investing. They are, you know, they're buying a house and they'll fix and flip, or they're not flip it, maybe keep it as a rental, right? We're talking about building wealth. How does it differ in the commercial real estate side, in the regard of scaling? How do people do that? How does it scale differently?
Well, I was talking to a gentleman over the last couple of weeks, as we call it, counseling a client applicant or a client to dig in ex as an example, what you would be interested in getting involved in. What flavors do you like? What flavors do you dislike? And I was reminded, he said he's not a fan of partnerships. He says, I like to do things myself. And one of the brilliant minds of the day said, you can only grow so far by yourself. You need people. Another one told me the worst thing you can do is partners. Partners are the worst. Partners like being married. You're responsible for everything they do and so on and so forth. So this is another subject that you really, really have to figure out for yourself. Am I a lone wolf, and am I going to spend my life as a lone wolf? Well, I need to take that into consideration in the type of property that I want to go into, because you need people around. Now, you can hire most things around you, but if you're the only person that's available to make a decision on big and important things, you potentially have a different kind of a problem. You have the, what is it? As you're phasing out, as you're retired, something happens to you. I used to say, what happens if you get hit by a bus? And people really didn't like that one. So now I say to the small investors, well, what happens if you get hit by the winning lottery ticket? Who's going to deal with this thing for you? Because if you've just won all of Jed Clampett's millions, you don't want to be dealing with that 12-flat apartment building. You're turning it over to somebody else. You're not going
Right.
to abandon it. So you look at things from that scale. You start to think, what is it that I like to do? What is it that I don't like to do? And what is it that I'm going to have to do? Go down that path, figure out these three different areas of the jobs that need to be done. If you're new to commercial real estate, the smartest thing you can do, in my personal opinion, is partner with somebody who has experience. Get in, I'm not cr okay, get into a deal with somebody who's already made a bunch of the mistakes so that you don't have to. I also like to say, trust me, you're not going to live long enough to make all of the mistakes. Learn from others.
That is.
You're not going to live long enough to make all of the mistakes. Another avenue that people can go down, and people are skittish on this one too, is invest in a syndication. Buy an interest in a deal that somebody else is doing. The same critical due diligence applies. Just because somebody's got something that looks like a good deal doesn't mean that they have a clue what they're doing. I had people come to me a few months ago. They're working with a guy that he's an experienced, decades old experience. He builds beautiful houses. They said, we're building a subdivision, 100 houses. They're going to build 100 houses. I found out, I discovered they set this whole deal up wrong. They got really, really bad financing in it, and they're losing the deal and the investment they put in it. Just because a guy is a master craftsman house builder doesn't mean that he knows how to get the sewers into the ground and the streets on top of them and get through all the bureaucracy in an efficient manner to make a 100-house subdivision work. He's qualified to build the houses, not to develop the subdivision. So it's just as critically important. And I just had this conversation with somebody the other day. If you don't understand the deal, don't write the check. A passbook
That's a great.
savings less than 1% rate of return is far, far superior than losing your assets.
All right, Steve, I like that. We're going to come back in just a few minutes after this break. All right, we are back. I'm here with Steve Smullen. He is a commercial real estate investor, and he is going to be on a panel Thursday. You need to be at that online meeting, 6:30 p.m. Eastern. Go to CincinnatiREIA.com to register. It is something you're not going to want to miss. It's going to be a great panel talking more in depth about commercial real estate. So, Steve, let's talk a little bit. You talked somewhat about predictable income. Okay, we had predictable income that typically more in commercial, right? Commercial leases, as you said, are, they're typically multi-year leases. You know, people moving out all the time. That can be great. So explain sort of the cash flow of commercial properties. How is it, how is there a reason it's stronger than residential? Obviously, things like the brick building.
Again, the just the scale, the size of the deal you can get into. You can get into a deal that just this one deal will provide me all the cash flow I need for life. You get a high quality tenant that's got a long-term lease, and they call that mailbox money. Your management experience in that situation. This is a pure what they call net, an absolute triple net lease, meaning the tenant, and again, going back to the drugstore scenario, the tenant is literally responsible for everything. The owner puts up the building, tenant moves in, they take responsibility for absolutely everything. The landlord's duty from that point on is to mosey out to the mailbox and get their check every month. And they don't even do that anymore. It's just wired into their bank account so
Right.
they can go
Yeah.
straight to the racetrack and enjoy it.
There you go. Loser at the racetrack, right?
There you go.
So, all right.
And they can
So,
do that because they know for years they've got another check coming in next month.
yeah. And I mean, I just think what I've found the best is literally it's just a multi-year lease. You don't have to constantly be considering, are they going to move out, give me 60 days notice and move out. And,
Oh, typically it'll be in a long-term lease. It'll be 6 months, a year's notice.
right. Yeah, so you have plenty
Here's
of
one
time.
other thing. If you're of such resource that you can buy one of these great big home improvement stores, or you can buy one of these warehouse club type stores, on those, when you go to get a loan, you can get a 1.0 debt coverage ratio on a deal like that. Those are recognized as what they call bond rated leases. They're a quality credit tenant, and the lenders in that arena will lend at a 1.1 debt coverage ratio. You don't have to that extra 20, 25% exceeding the
Wow,
cash flow on it.
that's a quality triple net. What kind of tenants are like that?
Am I allowed to say names?
Well, I guess maybe we shouldn't because this is a
Yeah, I think
nonprofit
that was
radio.
one
So.
of so. But the example is, you look at the credit rated drugstores, the credit rated, the big giant home improvement stores that we all know and do business with, the big warehouse clubs that we all know that are actually not even just across the country, but international. Some of them are. These are publicly large, publicly traded companies, and they sign 20 and 30 year leases for those facilities.
That's amazing. That is mailbox money. So let's talk about so residential values are driven mostly by comparable sales. Although even if I did residential for rental, I look at the same that commercial would do. But how is the value of residential comparable sales? How do we value commercial real estate? How is that valued differently?
Well, that's a big question. First of all, comparable sales do still apply. They are an indication of what's going on in a particular marketplace. And in my opinion, all asset classes are still market specific.
All right.
In one community, people might like to shop at the store with the red sign. And in another community, people might prefer to shop at the store with the blue sign hanging on the post out front or up on the post out front. And so one might be stronger than the other. That doesn't make them equal. But I think more to your point is A house tends to be valued on what the comparable sales are in the neighborhood, and that's really the focus. Most commercial real estate, a measuring stick that's commonly applied or barometer is what they call the cap rate or the capitalization rate. And that's a formula, a function of the net operating income. That's the remaining income after all of the expenses have been paid. And if you're really, really doing it right, that includes funding a reserve account for replacements that you know you're going to need. Furnaces don't last forever in commercial real estate, just like they don't last forever in residential real estate. So you are going to have replacements in these properties, but the cap rate is a function of the net operating income. And that brings us back to the very first question or second question, and that's understanding, really thoroughly understanding cash flows. When you're doing your taxes, you see, I got this much income and I had all of these expenses. And when you're doing your tax returns, you've got every single expense plugged in there. When you're doing an analysis on a commercial property, you need to be just as diligent at understanding all of the expenses and recognizing that you might have a broader array of income streams. You might have a billboard painted on the side of a building. You might have a cell tower at the back corner of the lot. Maybe the neighboring building doesn't have enough parking and they've made a deal with you to lease a handful of your parking spaces, or vice versa. These are all things that you have to look at, know, and understand.
On the operating income, does that include the debt service? Or does it, when you're talking cap rate, do we include the debt service, or what is included in operating income?
No, I'm glad you asked that. Debt service was described to me way, way back at CI 101, back in the 1980s or early 1990s. Debt is personality. You can have three different investors look at the exact same building, and each one of them are likely to have a different debt profile. One guy might pay all cash for the building. One guy might just have enough money just to barely make the down payment, hopefully fund a reserve account. And so he's going to get 70, 65, 60% leverage. And there might be somebody else that says, you know, I'm real conservative. I'm happy with just a 50% loan. So the idea of using the cap rate, and again, the cap rate is not the only measuring stick. I can't emphasize that strongly enough. The cap rate is not the only measuring stick, but the idea of the cap rate is it reduces everything to an apples to apples comparison. So you can compare buildings on their actual performance before adding the personality of debt service and tax benefits and so forth. The building's financial function before adding any of that personality to it.
Okay. So what are some other measures that you would use besides cap rate as far as deciding whether to buy?
So I'm not a fan of it, but and I don't know how much it's used these days, but in apartments, I used to always hear the gross rent multiplier. In fact, bankers would talk about the gross rent multiplier. And the big flaw with the gross rent multiplier is, even across the street, if you're in one assessor's district compared to the other assessor's district, or one school district compared to the other school district, your operating expenses are going to be different. The gross rent multiplier is just that. It's a multiplier of the rents, and it doesn't take into account the expenses. And then two buildings can be side by side, and one building was well made, and they might both look the same today, but somewhere along their life, maybe one building was very poorly maintained and neglected, and another building has always been superbly maintained. So evolving over the life of those two buildings, their operating expenses are going to be different. Their taxes can be different if they had two different owners at various points. If one person bought this building 30 years ago, decided to buy the building right next door, his taxes probably reflect that that property hasn't changed hands over the last 30 years, where this one's been through 10 different owners over the last 30 years. Gotcha. His taxes are probably going to be greater.
All right. Steve, we're going to take one more break, and then we're going to finish up talking commercial real estate with Steve Smullen. We'll be back after this. All right, we are back. I'm Scott Ellsworth, your host. I'm here with Steve Smullen, commercial real estate investor. Just a great amount of information on this call tonight. And you need to come Thursday. That's tomorrow, 6:30 p.m. Go to CincinnatiREIA.com and sign up. So Steve, let's talk a little bit about financing. So how is the financing different in commercial real estate than it is when I typically buy a four family or two family, something like that? How is the financing different?
Wow, that's a tricky one. There's so many influencing factors. Let's go back to the giant big box home improvement store and remember that in a big box store, you can get a 1.0 debt coverage ratio loan. That means if you have $100,000 of income on that property, you can devote 100% of the income to debt service and the lender's happy. It's worth pointing out that you've done that deal for a different set of benefits. If you're putting 100% of that income into debt service, you're not getting any cash flow out of that. So you've bought that deal seeking a different set of benefits. But getting back to, and it'd be great to spend more time on benefits than what we're limited to here today. Coming back to your question, we're hearing it's common now, just now in recent years, to hear about DSCR loans. That's the debt service coverage ratio loans. So this is one of the measuring sticks that your lender in commercial real estate is always going to look at. All right. And then I don't know where the floor is these days, but let's say it's probably in the $5 million range. If you are seeking a loan at $5 million or more, the lender is looking far more at the asset than they are the borrower. The borrower still has to have net worth and a good credit rating, but the liability for that loan, the recourse for that loan could be limited to the real estate. No personal liability is a possibility. And you rarely find that scenario in residential real estate. The other things are what's going on in the marketplace. Self-storage has been everybody's darling child for years now. Well, self-storage has lost some of its luster in a lot of markets across the country. And it's worth mentioning that just because self-storage is still highly desirable, as an example here in the Chicago marketplace, that doesn't mean it's still highly desirable in Texas or Florida, where it's absolutely been a rocket. Everybody wants to jump on board and go for the ride. What's going on is there's been so much building that there's an oversaturation in the marketplace, and so rents are on the decline. That takes us back to the net operating income that directly is reflected in the net operating income, and that translates into your debt service coverage ratio. So just because a product type or an asset class is really still doing well over here doesn't mean that it's doing well in your backyard. You need to understand that because your lender more than likely will look into it. If they don't already understand the asset class, they're going to look into it. So you might find what was a really great deal a couple of years ago, but if the rents are on the decline, the expenses don't go with that.
So you got those two risks. You talked about oversaturation, and you talked a little bit about rents being in decline. Are there other risks that people get into commercial that they need to think about?
Well, you start with every risk that you might experience owning any kind of rental property, a house, a little apartment building, a duplex, a three flat. You've got those risks just in themselves. The minute you start inviting the greater public into your facility, everybody that comes to your property can be a potential risk as well. Now, I don't know if you watch the evening news, but just last night, a woman in New York fell down an open manhole cover.
I just read that.
It's just unbelievable. And this was sitting right out front of a very, very high-end luxury retailer. She had just climbed out of her luxury car and took one step and boom, fell down an open manhole cover. Is that a risk that we can mitigate? To some extent, the answer is yes, but we can't risk-proof the world. We know the government has tried to risk-proof our world as much as, and we know how unhappy that makes most of us because of some of the extremes that we go to in trying to de-risk the world. People have to take responsibility for their own actions. Unfortunately, we're in such a litigious society that you're exposed to those. Now, should this woman have been looking where she was walking? The news said that she climbed. There was a witness, saw this happen, said he saw her get out of her car. She took one step and fell down the manhole cover. So she didn't get out of it climbing out of her car. She was standing on solid ground and didn't watch where her next step was.
All right. So tell me, are there asset classes right now? We've only got about 3 minutes left. Are there certain asset classes that are more recession-proof? I mean, out of all the type of commercial, anything that sticks out as recession-proof?
That's a great, great question, Scott. And in my opinion, my own personal feel is that bread and butter working class housing is about as safe as you can get. Not the luxury housing. I don't think anybody should ever be a slumlord because I don't think we should have slums to begin with.
Correct.
I personally think good, safe, clean housing for working class people is about as safe as you can get, because if the jobs go away, they're going to get hurt, but every other asset class is going to get hurt as well.
Right.
People are always going to need a place to live.
All right. So we got 2 minutes. What makes a good commercial deal? Anything like a couple points to make a good commercial deal? What do you have to really look for?
You like it. You're happy. It works. You did your due diligence. Everything is working out as planned. Caveat, everything does not ever work out as planned. There's always bumps in the road. The reality is you're going to make mistakes. You've made mistakes in your residential real estate. You're going to make mistakes in commercial real estate. As soon as you embrace that reality, the faster you can launch yourself into success. You're going to make mistakes. Everybody has.
All right. Well, Steve, you have been a plethora of information tonight. We just so appreciate you taking the time. Look forward to hearing you tomorrow night on the panel. So for our listeners, you've been listening to Real Life Real Estate Investing. Thanks for tuning in tonight. Until next time, remember, where others see property, we see possibility. Keep investing smart. See you next week.